And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. It is at 9:05 and we have our Friday panel joining us very, very shortly. I'll introduce them to you coming up a little later on. We'll be looking forward to Donegal v Derry, and also if that's entertainment, that's all between now and 12. I just want to give you a reminder of how you stay and keep in contact with us. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or you can give us a call on 07491 25 000, and also email comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to see our guests, and it's a mixture of in studio and remotely, then you can watch us on your smart screen TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app if you're at home, and across Facebook on Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and on the X platform at Highland Radio. In studio with me is Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters. Thanks for joining us, Brendan.
Thank you.
Good morning. I might actually ask you to stick those headphones on. Sorry, I should have done that before we came on air, because you'll want to be able to hear, I'm sure. Michael White, Chair of the Green Party in Donegal. Good morning to you, Michael White.
Morning, Greg.
And we also have with us Katie Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg.
Kathy, I beg your pardon. Sorry, I don't know why I went with Katie, but Kathy is, of course, your lovely name. Thank you so much for joining us, Kathy. Right, okay, so we've quite a bit to talk about, but we have to start with the story that's dominating all of the papers today, and it's a complex one too. Over 4 decades after the biggest fire disaster in the history of the state, an inquest jury has found that all 48 of the young people who died at the Stardust nightclub were unlawfully killed. After liberating for 11 days, the panel of 7 women and 5 men returned to the pillar room at the Rotunda Hospital on Thursday afternoon to deliver their majority findings and verdicts to coroner Dr. Myra Cullinan. Finally, the families got answers that had remained unanswered in many respects, despite initial coroner's inquests and a tribunal of inquiry chaired by Mr. Justice Ronan Keane in 81. There were 2 subsequent Oireachtas-appointed reviews in 2008 and 2017. And now the question comes to what happens next? Should there be a criminal investigation? Brendan Byrne, I'll start with you, if that's okay. I mean, it's a long time coming, isn't it? Justice for the families of the victims of the Stardust.
It's shocking, and I was just looking at the papers before I came in here. And when you see all the photographs of the 48 victims, and they're ranging in ages of 16, 18, 24, 25, and to think it took 43 years for those families to get justice and to get a sense of, you know, fairness from the state. I know that in 2009, the original tribunal finding was quashed, but that's still 15 years. And the state has some serious questions to answer here. Why, under God, did it take 43 years to have an inquest into what was one of the biggest tragedies in the history of the state, where 48 young people lost their lives? The verdict is there. It is unlawful killing. Of course it's unlawful killing. There was exits locked, and there was no due diligence or care taken whatsoever. But there's a complete systems failure on the part of the state here.
Eamon Butler, the former manager of the club, had argued previously that the unlawful killing verdict should not have been open to the jury at all. It was ruled that that finding could be returned, but only if no person was identified or identifiable as being responsible. I mean, it's over to the families, really, whether or not that's acceptable or not. But I think the fact that unlawful killing was allowed to be ruled as a verdict is the right decision, or was the right decision.
Absolutely, and it's the fair, and it reflects the reality. Inquests must reflect the reality in an unbiased, fair manner, and that's what we've had. But I think the issue here today is, why did it take 43 years to get to this juncture? Why did it take 15 years from the quashing of the Keane Tribunal to get to this juncture? There's systems failures everywhere. I like to think, as a modern state, which we now are, that we've progressed from that. But in cases like this, where it's such a time lag, such a time delay, it's shocking.
And Kathy, you know, your reaction overall to this process, and also, I wonder, are you like me? And my thoughts almost went straight away to those who fought this for much of their adult life, but unfortunately passed and never actually got to see this I was going to say resolution, but this, I suppose, next step on the path to resolution, perhaps.
Yeah, and I've met some of the Stardust campaigners over the years, Greg. You know, I've met Antoinette Keegan, and as you say, some of those people, their parents were very elderly. They passed away before justice, they could see justice done. What struck me in watching the TV coverage yesterday was the dignity of these people in the face of the state's sort of intractable kind of walls going up at every juncture. These people yesterday just remained so dignified. And I watched Jim Fitzpatrick, who was injured in the fire. You know, they didn't have any. They say they have anger, but it certainly wasn't coming across. Maybe that time will come. Maybe yesterday was the day for justice for their loved ones to be played out. But I don't think it's good enough now that we just say, oh, yeah, justice, they have their justice. That's grand. Let's move on. You know, the state owes these people an apology, number one. Whether there are, you know, other elements of this still to play out in terms of a Garda investigation. But we do need a state apology now, because these people tried at every turn.
Kathy, just in relation to the Garda investigation, because I noted a little bit of a pause in when you said that, and I'm a bit nervous as to how to broach this myself, in that, you know, I mean, when you listen to the evidence, you know, doors being chained up, exits being blocked. And then obviously, you know, there are still people around today that theoretically could be found responsible for that. Why are we, why is there a sort of, are we a bit tentative in sort of saying, yes, there definitely should be a criminal investigation into this? And I'm sorry if I'm misreading, but it's just, I was a bit reluctant to go down that road myself as well, because, yeah. I mean, obviously there's legal implications and what have you, but surely should be a no-brainer that obviously now, after we found out what we found out, there should be a criminal investigation.
Yeah, I think the guards will have to look at this file very carefully now. I mean, it's important to say that an inquest never makes findings of blame or culpability. You know, it really is there to establish, you know, the who, the what, the why, what exactly happened. And that was really, really important. But, you know, I mean, the litany of failures that you see from this inquest, I mean, you have things like, you know, contributory factors. You know, there was a fire, an electrical fault. Then there were tiles on walls that are obviously not fit for purpose. Then there are seats that are melting, sending up toxic fumes into the air. There's, you know, the whole thing is like a fireball. As Jim Fitzpatrick said in primetime last night, you know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But why did it go wrong? We know now why it went wrong. There were things that weren't done right, you know? So I guess we have to see, it's up to the guards to look at this file now and see what happens next. Mm. And I think, you know, when the pause comes and the families have time to think on what happens next, I mean, I think a state apology is necessary after what they've been put through, and after government sort of did not step up to this, you know, and the dignity of these people was just shining from them yesterday.
I wonder, is it up to the Gardaí to decide if there's a criminal investigation here, or in the first instance, would they liaise with the DPP before actually even launching an investigation? I'm not really sure of what the process might be in that regard.
I think that's it, Greg. I think the guards will take a look at the file, and then, you know, they'll probably, if there is anything to be sent on to the DPP, that's where it will go, and a decision will be made. You know, obviously this goes back to 1981, so there would have to be a decision made on whether it's in the public interest to hold an investigation. But, you know, Stardust is one of these things that everyone knows about it. It's, I think the public interest is huge.
Yeah. Michael White of the Greens, the chair of the Green Party in Donegal. I suppose your reaction to the verdict?
There's a couple of things. There's one, like, an apology won't be sufficient. The families deserve more than that. And there's two big things for me. One is an investigation of what actually happened, the cause of the fire, and culpability being assigned for that. But there's a sequence of things that happened after that need to be opened. I need to be careful what I say. But one of the big issues for the families is that a finding was made in 1981 that the fire was caused by arson. And for that reason, the Butterley family, who owned the property, weren't open for any civil cases, and likewise the families couldn't get any recompense. Now, we're being careful here because there's a series of events after that that would certainly, as a non-lawyer, would put lots of questions into my mind. Dublin, 1981, 80s, the connections between people back then, it makes me, raises questions in my mind about why certain findings were made legally and then no progress could possibly be made. And I can say certain factual things. For example, the Butterley family, where Patrick Butterley was involved in TACA, who were funders of Fianna Fáil in the 60s and 70s. That's just a matter of record. There were other connections between, and you know, so Terry Keane, Ronan Keane, etc. All of those, without making any accusations, would certainly raise in my mind questions about why progress was stalled so much in the 1980s and 1990s.
But is it not also fair to say, of course, and I'm not contradicting you, but just teasing it out. Is it not fair to say that given sort of the makeup of the country, the size of the country and what have you, that you probably could make similar connections to anyone at any time?
I'm not sure. And I'm not sure in a case where 48 people died, this would have happened in other countries. I mean, this is more like a Bloody Sunday thing where the government was actively trying to prevent the truth coming out. It's very annoying. I don't want to go too far.
No, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. 40 years, yeah. And there are connections between people, but the connections are, I think they raise very serious questions in my mind about what happens and why progress is delayed. And I think Charlie Bird would be a very happy man, God rest him. He shared a lot of those concerns, and he's one of the reasons things finally progressed towards this inquest, but it's not over yet. There are two things. One, the family needs to be compensated, families need to be compensated, and two, justice needs to be done in terms of somebody being held responsible for the deaths of 48 kids. And that hasn't happened yet, so that needs to happen.
I suppose we don't want this to rumble on forever either. And I suppose, is there a point there, Brendan, where maybe we have to pick our fights? And that, of course, Michael has raised concerns. He's not the only person that has those, but that's almost quite separate from, you know, a criminal investigation into finding someone responsible for this. You know, that's almost a separate.
Go ahead, Michael, very briefly.
He's not interrupting any of you. Can come in at any point. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I just wanted to raise this point before Brendan speaks, is that Brendan had talked about a system failure. The point I'm making is it may not have been a system failure. It may have been intentional to, without accusing anybody of anything, it may have been intentional by some actors to prevent progress. So I don't think it was just people not getting their act together and it was a system failure, you know, like an act of God. It may have been an intentional bad thing, and that's why I'd like to see that investigated if possible.
Would you share those views, Brendan?
I think we owe it to the families, and this is the day for the families that have waited 43 years for an inquest. And let's be honest here, an inquest is the first step for any family that's subject to an incident such as this in their pathway to get justice. So I think we shouldn't deflect from that. And we are now 43 years later at step one, what should have been in the early to mid 80s, which is the findings of an inquest. So there's important steps that the government of today have to take in terms of this inquest. The report will be going to the government. They must determine, are they going to have a criminal investigation into this or not? They must also determine if they're going to issue a state apology, which I think is almost an automatic given at this stage. But I think we need to be very focused here that we had a systems failure, complete systems failure over multiple governments over 43 years. But thankfully, we're at a juncture now where there is an inquest. It's an official inquest. It's a finding. And what we do now will be a judgment on us as a society, what we do with this inquest. And I would be one for urging that this is fully investigated, because this is 48 lives that were lost. And it is an unlawful killing. And that's a finding. They determined the facts, an inquest, and that's the duty of an inquest. Now, for us as a state to sit on that and to do nothing further would be equally as shocking as what has happened over the last 43 years.
Cathy, you know, I mean, obviously this is an inquest into the tragic loss of 48 lives, but when we talk about system failures and how we investigate things or how we get to the truth, you know, I can think of at least five or six reports, and such is the way it's done, you kind of forget about them. But there's a planning report into planning in Donegal. Where is that? I know this is not about lost lives, but who is to say how it affects people and the importance of that? HSC investigations into the mistreatment of patients that... We talk about it for a while and then it just seems to disappear. You know, hundreds of medical records accessed down below me here when someone gained access to St. Connell's. And it was effectively, we can't talk about that. We're going to investigate that, end of story. Now, as I say, none of this is on the scale of what we've been talking up until now. But we do seem to have quite a strong reputation and quite a strong ability to bury stuff that we don't really want out in the public domain. That really worries me.
It worries me too, Greg. And I think, you know, a lot of this would have sort of been buried as well had it not been for the families, you know, stepping up year after year after year. And, you know, some of them are now very elderly. And what it must have taken after, you know, there was one woman, she lost three of her children, you know, in this fire. And those people, you know, went up and down the country to garner support, to raise funds, you know, to knock on politicians' doors,
Europe.
To not give up.
Yeah.
And I think had they not been as diligent, you know, and respectful of their loved ones' memories, and it was an act of love to continue to do this, to get justice for them, then this would probably go like the way of all other things, like a lot of things in this country, gathering, you know, reports gathering dust on shelves. But it wasn't good enough. I think what was such... a difficulty for the families was the fact that, you know, the original Tribunal of Inquiry found that there was arson in this, that in some way these young people who were in this building were in some way complicit in the deaths of others, which was utter nonsense and has found to be such. But I think, you know, sometimes people power is amazing. What we've seen, you know, in their grief, they managed to carry this through. And yesterday we saw, you know, the fulfillment of that. And I think, you know, sometimes people power is the most amazing thing that we have.
But unfortunately, we have Michael come in. I was going to come to you anyway, but I'll put this to you.
Yeah, just, I mean, the parallels here that everybody should be concerned about. So you're talking about things brushed under the carpet or not resolved. I mean, Micah is screaming in her face there. Like, can anybody tell me why everybody's been able to walk away from that? And I'm saying this, as you know, I'm going to be knocking my house down in about 5 weeks. So I've got skin in the game, but... How is it nobody's been held responsible for that? We're all aware of the brilliant work the Mica Action Group and other groups have done, and yet 10 years into this, nobody's been really held responsible, and I'm not confident they will be. We've got a scheme that needs to be changed.
But further to that, if I can add into it, Michael, because it does feed into what I was going to say next, it's about, though, and we have, because of leaks in the past, learned that the state actively will make things more complicated to try and make things go away. There's some people feel the defective concrete block scheme does just that, that it's so onerous to qualify and to get through that people are being discouraged from doing so. If you take a case against the HSE, they will fight you for years. And then on the day the court case is about to be heard, they'll settle with you on the steps of the court. Like, this can't all be by accident. Surely it is by design?
I think there are differences. I think the HSE legally has always taken an attitude of us versus them, and it seems to be recommended by their legal teams. The Mica thing is a wee bit different. So I'd say there's a couple of tiers to the
Mica
thing.
So but you don't think the civil servants, right, made this particularly awkward to access and could have accepted very simple things like penalty-free downsizing, right? And the civil servants resisted that because they didn't want to seem to be beaten by 30,000 people on the streets of Dublin.
Yeah, so I just want to differentiate the people we've been dealing with in Donegal County Council have been fantastic. They're really nice. So that's their civil servants too, but they're doing a great job. I agree with you entirely.
The
Department of Housing, the Department of Finance, a bunch of officials there have fought tooth and nail over dollars and cents, as the Americans say. It's over pennies, and they're causing loads of grief, and they are making it difficult. And it's going to... I've said this internally in the Green Party, it's going to end up in court, and in 10 years' time, it'll end up in the European Court of Justice, and the state will end up paying six times as much as they should do now. Like, there's no way they're going to get away with, say, commercial properties. If you look at the centre of Bontrana or Letterkenny, loads of commercial properties there are going to be on the verge of collapse over the next 5-6 years. that's not going to be allowed to, you know, so there will be changes to the scheme, but it'll be dragging them over broken glass, screaming and kicking, and it's very frustrating. I don't know if that's a culture unique to Ireland. I don't know enough to know whether that would be different if it was in Florida or
well,
Birmingham.
It's very different in terms of defective concrete they've been full wraparound services for people in America affected by
this. I guess my point is they're going to end up paying this money anyway, and probably much more because of their attitude. It's going to cost the state.
Yes, but look how much they'll be able to piss the public off in the interim.
Can I jump in there, Greg, on that point?
Of course, Kathy.
And you know, the parallels may seem like they're, you know, these two things are completely different. But if the state for once put people and human beings at the centre of this rather than finances or rather than reputations, then perhaps what we would have seen was swifter action. You know, obviously many of my neighbours are affected by mica, and, you know, friends and all around us. I see in my own locality houses being knocked down. And I just, you know, house can be rebuilt, yes. But what about the impact, the psychological impact on a community, on families who are being uprooted and having to move and worry about where they're going to get the money for this, and are they going to have the money for kids to go to college, or, you know, the psychological trauma on families is not evenly addressed. People are not at the centre of this thing. People keep talking about concrete blocks, but they're not looking at the centre, the people at this, and that really is something that is lost in this, you know.
But I think that's partly, if you look, guys in the Department of Finance, I'm sure, are some of the reasons that some of this hasn't gone through, but like they've done over the last 20 years. And part of the problem, referring to Greg's point, are we unique in how we do this? Part of the reason they get away with this is that they sail off at the sunset with massive pensions afterwards. If you look at what happened during the crash, loads of people were implicated in both the Department of Finance and the Central Bank. None of them paid a price. Like they, the guy that was the head of the Central Bank headed off with a huge pension. Department of Finance were the reason that some of those changes were fought off last year after the Oireachtas Committee.
Brendan Byrne, come in.
Michael, with respect, I think you're flapping around a lot of points there. The reality is we elect a government. The government are supposed to hold civil servants to account. I come from a political background, but I'm no longer politically active. And the reality is we started debating this on the basis of what Greg said. The state will drag out things, will make obstacles in your way on the premise that they have deeper pockets than the citizen.
Do you believe
the
that's the case?
Absolutely.
That's worrying.
Absolutely. And I would have instances in the sector that I represent now, the fishing sector, where the officials, when we would be in court, would say, look at folks, we have deeper pockets. This is a direct quote. We have deeper pockets than you, and we have the state behind you.
Wow. Okay.
So we need to get real here. And we're in an election year and we're in an election cycle. That we need to elect stronger governments that hold those officials that Michael is talking about, whether they're in the Department of Finance or any other department. We elect governments to govern, and it's about time they started governing.
Okay, well, listen, we do have to take a break. We are in the company this morning of Cathy Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild, Brendan Byrne, CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters, and Michael White, chair of the Green Party. And by the way, if anyone wants to come back on what Brendan has said, we can do that after the break as well. By the way, Michael, I don't know if you feel you need to reboot, if that's the right word, anything there. But we're going to take a break. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Okay, Michael, were you accused of faffing there? I don't know. Given it's an election year, I think all the more important, if you do want to sort of respond, it's up to you.
Yeah, it's not often I get accused of faffing around, Greg. So in the interest of transparency, it'd be interesting to know what political party Brendan was involved with. It's just a question I have in my mind.
Well, I'll tell you, I know. Guess. Guess. Yes.
Right, thanks. So that's good. Just so everybody on the show knows that Brendan has been associated with Fianna Fáil. So that might, I think, colour some of his responses.
I think, sorry, I should have said that, but I think
that's inappropriate now. I'm no longer politically active.
I know, but I think I'm in the Green Party, Brendan. So.
I think it's widely known that, I should have mentioned, it's widely known that Brendan Byrne was a member of Fianna Fáil. I'm not sure if he's still paid up, no?
No.
Yeah, so the point I was making is that officials are blocking progress on mica, and the question is why are they blocking it, and the other question is how to prevent that from being blocked.
Okay.
I think Brendan saying strong government will sort that out. What is his definition of strong government?
One that stands up to the civil service, and when we talk about that, and I think and I hope and I should be clear, We are, when we talk of, about that on this show, invariably, and I should make it clear, we're talking effectively like the permanent government, the civil servants that sort of engage with the ministers, and not the very hardworking, also civil servants that are yeah. overstretched and under-resourced often right across the system here. I thought that was clear, but anyway, I appreciate the clarification.
And actually, I should be clear too. I don't want to be party political on this. I think this is a problem for everybody in Donegal, and whether you're Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or Greens or whatever, like I'm Greens, my house is getting knocked down. There's plenty of Fianna Fáil people in the same situation as Fine Gael and it's a Sinn Féin. All of us here need to figure out, it's a genuine question in my mind, how, whatever the next government's composition is, how will we get that MICA scheme improved? I think the election of MICA councillors will have an impact one way or the other, depending on what vote they get.
I think
what other steps can be taken to get that scheme fixed? For example, where did the zero interest rate bank loan thing go? It was announced in October, mentioned in October, that's disappeared. People are having to fork out between 20 and 40 grand for foundations. That's obviously wrong and should get sorted out. There's a number of other things that need to be sorted out really quickly. How will that happen, regardless of who is elected? How are we going to make that happen?
I mean, we so are in a situation where if the CEO of the council stating on this programme that if it were he would actually try and find a way to replace foundations, and then we have yeah. a scheme. He's the head of the council that's partly administering it. Then we have an actual scheme that doesn't, at this point, take that into account. And it's all happening right before our very eyes. It's not.
It goes back to the point.
There's not that many people through the scheme yet. Next year, the year after that, one of the members of the Mega Action Group called this like a slow-moving earthquake.
It goes like back to the point that I was addressing before the commercial break there is, we elect governments to govern, you know, civil service, the permanent government are there, but they're to be held to account under the constitution by the elected government of Ireland as elected by Dáil Éireann. So the point I'm making is that, you know, sometimes when we have debates, be it on MICA or earlier we had it on Stardust or anything, governments are not governing. And that's not a criticism solely of this government. It's a criticism by me of the last four or five
governments. Yeah, I get that. And Cathy, you know, the Green Party
just
want to bring other people in as well. Yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say, Cathy, I think the Greens sort of came in. I'm not sure they sort of promised it as part of the election, but, you know, to hold the government to account. I think Mary Harney quite famously thought that she was going to change the world, and then once elected to government, well, it's not really quite like we thought it was in advance. Paraphrasing, perhaps a little unfair to her, but the nuts and bolts of it are kind of accurate. It's maybe there isn't a strong enough government that can actually be formed that can take on the civil servants that we're talking of here, not the local hardworking ones, but the power brokers.
Well, so briefly, it's not just the civil servants. There are vested interests from industry and other sectors that are influencing matters as well. So,
yeah, for sure, yeah. Take them all on. Cathy?
I have seen people at the very earliest stages have been elected to the Dáil, and they are absolutely, you think they are going to go in and they're going to change things, and they're so enthusiastic. And you actually, for a moment, your faith is restored in politics when you meet them, and you meet them on election day, and it's their first run, their first rodeo. And then, you know, you just meet them as the years go on, as I have in Leinster House over the years, and they're jaded and they're tired and that enthusiasm is gone. And I just think the system seems to rip it out of them. It just seems to shred that enthusiasm.
I think there's something about the bubble too. I think there's a bubble down there that, yeah, and I've been really quite disappointed with some people's comments in a recent time that the bubble's got them too.
I see that, and you can see that happening to people, and sometimes it feels like it's just a game that people are playing. You know what I would love to see restored in politics is that, you know, it comes back, like all politics is local, you know, and some of the best political operators that I can see are actually on the ground doing things in their local communities. You know, I would love to see that replicated on the national stage, where there are, you know, that you know, it is about the people. Because I don't get that feeling.
No, and it's got to a point. It's got to a point now whereby, you know, and it's going to come on to the next thing, the next question now, but it's kind of got to a feeling now too that if you do try and call it out, you know, you're sidelined, or you're seen as being anti this or something other, so that, you know, you're being stifled. And that used to actually only be on social media, but I'm seeing it now in the mainstream media a little bit more, whereby, you know, you're called out by simply asking questions as being something or other. Just in relation to the bubble, who's our friend from South Donegal, Brendan? Mr. Gilday, is it? Deputy Gilday? Or that went in on the...
Tom Gilday.
Tom Gilday. He never got sucked in by the ball.
No.
He never spoke much in the Dáil. I think he spoke once on the deflector.
Very effectively on that night, I remember it, actually.
He got sorted and then he got out. Yeah. And that was it. So he didn't... I don't think he succumbed to the five sides and the quiz nights.
What we just started this discussion on is much deeper, you know, and I think you put your finger on it there when you challenge the system, both the public service and some of them, and maybe even the media isolate you. But that's what has failed us as a society and has failed us as a country. You know, we have to hold to account those that are the decision makers and those that draft the decisions. And that's what the permanent...
Yeah, but if they don't engage with you, what do you do?
Well, this is where the political arm of the state must be the strongest of all. That's the elected government. It's the voice of the people. And I have seen it progressively happening now for the last 4 to 5 governments. They've got weaker and weaker. And we have the cold arm of the public servants at senior level, because there's some very fine public servants, don't get me wrong.
For sure.
But those that are in the permanent government, and there is a bubble within that itself, is where the failure lies. And if you do, students in 20 years' time will be doing studies of the government of the day. And what I'm saying now, they will be reflecting in their theses when they study this. But we need to get real as an electorate when we go to the polls and elect strong, determined government, because this country needs change.
That might be quite well, but unfortunately, increasingly, the electorate do not believe the candidates are actually there to deliver what you talk of, and we get low turnouts and we get dissatisfaction, and we'll probably see a rise of independence, which I find somewhat ironic. But anyway, Cathy, the Garda Representative Association says it's disappointed Minister for Justice Helen McEntee will not be attending its annual conference in Mayo next week. Ms McEntee said it would not be appropriate for her to be there after the GRA did not invite Garda Commissioner Drew Harris. Tensions, of course, have been high between the association and Mr Harris due to an ongoing dispute over rosters. Do you agree with the minister's stance, or are we again seeing more politicians simply disengaging if they don't like the debate?
You know, I've watched over the years the politicians going to the various party conferences, and to be honest, I don't know what they're doing there. Sometimes I wonder, what are they actually doing there? Are they going there for the stand innovation, or are they going there for the booze? It's kind of like a Punch and Judy issue. What is the point, right? That's my first thing. I think it's a game, and I think, like, the minister going or not going, you know, the work will get done. I know that there's that argument that, you know, yes, she should meet the, you know, the rank and file Guardian, show the support. Drew Harris isn't going. She says she's, you know, in support of him. I think the whole thing, ministers going to party conferences is... I don't get it.
But if you're there, really as the top person, and that is a meeting that does represent the 13, 14 odd thousand Gardaí, even if you don't really necessarily like, there's an awful phrase that I can't stand, but I'm going to use it now. She could at least go there in listening mode, whether it be cheers or boos, but at least the Gardaí on the ground would feel heard.
Optics. It's not actually listening.
Does it not matter to the Gardaí, though,
you know,
Cathy?
Yeah, but it is, like, when you go to these things, Greg, it is optics. It's just to be seen to go in the door and be swept off and, you know, have lunch and the photo op. It, you know, if there's listening mode, then there are better ways to do it.
All right. Okay, Michael White?
Yeah, I actually think this is potentially becoming a serious issue, where you've got the Minister for Justice, the Garda Commissioner, and the Gardaí not singing from the same hymn sheet. I think it's kind of been brewing over the last 8 years. Like 20 years ago, it would have been unusual for a Garda representative to say that much about policy or stuff. They weren't so publicly or so vocal, but now it's becoming more and more common, and where they're not inviting the Commissioner to their own organisation. That's pretty bad. You know, that's... I think this is a serious issue, and it's kind of wraps up in a series of issues this year with doubts about Helen McEntee's effectiveness, that, you know, kind of highlighted by the Dublin riots. Obviously, the rank and file of the Gardaí are very unhappy with Drew Harris as well. So I think that this is it's more serious than simply not turning up for a pint and a sandwich. You know, it's not a good thing for the country, where the Minister for Justice and the Commissioner of the Gardaí and our police force are obviously not really unhappy with
each
other.
A police force that is losing numbers hand over fist as well, and of also a force whereby as soon as Drew Harris wants to be seen to be getting tough on Road Safety all of a sudden announces on the night that a primetime documentary is about to go out that every one of them is going to have to do half an hour of high visibility traffic policing per shift.
Well, there's two things. One is it makes them operationally less effective because he announces one thing and then you hear people counter briefing. The second thing is there's a danger of the politicization of the police force, which is a big thing in democracy we need to be careful of. So I think this is a, it seems like a silly thing this week, but it's actually it's a symptom of something that's
not. But Michael, is it not Ms. McEntee's job to grab both parties by the collar and say, right, this is, for all the reasons that you've outlined, say, right, I'm the boss here. We're going to have to get our house in order one way or other. I'm backing this guy, but you're going to have to work with him. What can he do for you? What can the Gardaí do for him? You know what I mean? Rather than sort of taking a side and leave the situation as dire as you outline it, is her role not to mediate and to ensure that the police force is harmonious and is run well?
Well, I think it's a big... If you ask people in Donegal, we've had a recent spate of burglaries, which would be a cause for concern. In Dublin, like I went to college in Dublin in the late 80s, early 90s. It was lovely, it was safe, you could walk around. Dublin's not like that anymore. So there's a general sense that things are a bit out of control here. People want to see a more effective policing. And so this is a hot topic going into an election year. It needs to be straightened out. So I'd say, you know, Simon Harris kind of positioned himself as, you know, law and order will be a top priority. They need to get on top of this pretty soon.
But before I bring Brendan in, back to you, Cathy, just in terms of what you see as Minister McEntee's role in trying to sort of, you know, get everyone on the same page as much as is possible. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean to throw Drew Harris under the bus, or but she's quite clearly saying, right, I'm standing with Drew here, I think. That's what my reading is. I'm only looking from the outside in, of course.
She is, but I've never seen, and I certainly can't remember a situation, I could be wrong here, that a Garda commissioner would not be invited to, you know, the Garda conference. I mean, surely that there is a way, you know, for Garda management to come together, you know.
Do you think the big mistake
bring
was
all parties, because I think this is in danger of escalating, and I don't mean to be trite when I say, I sometimes get the feeling that when ministers go to conferences, it's all about the minister, you know. Bigger issues at play here, which actually... You know, and maybe the minister does need to grasp a nettle and say, you know what, let's get this sorted out because we can't go on with the Garda Commissioner and Garda Management at loggerheads.
Did the GRA sort of paint themselves into a corner with that vote of no confidence in Drew Harris? That probably wasn't advisable, was it? It's kind of left them in this situation, really.
Where do you go? It's just, where do you go from here? Now, where, you know, how can I suppose...
You move forward from
get that? Back on the same page, you know, it definitely, I would say... There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of mistrust. There's a lot of how do those relationships get repaired?
Okay.
And I suppose that's what's most important, is that we have, you know, everyone in terms of justice and policing singing off the same hymn sheet for the good of all of us,
all right,
living communities.
Brendan?
Well, I think you put your finger on it, Greg, to be fair. Once they put a vote of no confidence in the commissioner, they did paint themselves into the corner. It's easy putting down a vote of no confidence, but what exactly do you do thereafter? Now, I think by escalating it, by not inviting them to the conference, was a mistake. I think then further escalating it by the Minister of the Day not going to that was a further mistake. So how many more mistakes do we do until we start to get normality back here to the GRA, to the functioning of the Garda, the Commissioner, who I have great confidence in? But it probably speaks to an issue that there is in this country, that we don't like bringing outsiders in to tell us how badly we are. We saw it earlier in Aer Lingus when we brought in Christoph Mueller.
But just in relation to that, Brendan, I'm sorry to cut across you. It really was a two-fingered salute to senior Gardaí in this country, though, when the government of the day did not think that there was someone within that organisation that had climbed the ranks, that had put 20, 30, 40 years in, that they didn't see that there'd be someone capable of doing it, that they had to bring someone down from the north.
No, I think you need to reach out and beyond the pool that's there. We need new thought processes. We need new opinion.
New culture.
New culture, exactly. And I think you're talking about something we need to discuss, the culture that's developing in this country. But back to the point I was making about Christoph Mueller, we had Aer Lingus all down through the years struggling. And we brought in one German man, one man, and after 3 years, it turned it around to be one of the most successful companies we had. So bringing people from the outside in is a terrific idea. It does displace those that think they have a sense of entitlement to getting the top job, or it displaces the natural order of promotion. But look at here, I believe the best person should always get the job, whether that person's on the inside or the outside.
And well, why don't we get a Taoiseach from Denmark then or something?
Well, if we could elect one, I think we... I wouldn't go to Denmark, I would go to Germany. I like some of these German thinkers. But back to the question you asked me in terms of the GRA and the Commissioner of the Day and the Minister, you know, it's farcical that we have this semantic going on at a time when drug culture has gone out of control, at a time when robberies are gone out of control, and someone mentioned Dublin earlier.
I think
it was Michael. I was in Dublin as a student. I'm now back on occasions when I'm lobbying in the Dáil. You can't walk through Dublin after 9 o'clock in certain parts. You could try it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Is that the same for every city, though?
Well, no, it's not. No, I'll probably be going to a fisheries conference in Barcelona. It may be there because of pickpocketing, but there isn't this degree of knife culture and drug culture. I think something has desperately gone wrong in this country, how we're managing the whole drug situation.
I'd agree with you there, Brendan. I lived in the north inner city in Dublin for many years, and I walked to work in the Irish Independent on Middle Abbey Street, and I walked home. I used to walk home after my night shift. I would be maybe, you know, I wouldn't do it now. I've been in that part of town.
Obviously, Cathy, I'm not being patronised, but you wouldn't do it because you see what's going on. It's not a perception. It's what you see.
Yeah, exactly. There feels like there's a sort of a dereliction of things have just stopped moving forward. There's parts of the north inner city in Dublin, they just look like, I mean, it is.
It's not true of other European cities. Like, you can walk through Copenhagen, you can walk through Munich. It's not a worldwide or European wide thing. This is a problem Ireland and Dublin needs to sort out.
And it's a shame because this beautiful, rich history of the capital that we have, and I was very proud to live there. And I just feel it's been let go to, you know.
And it's not just policing, though, Cathy. There's going to be more to it than that, too, though, isn't there?
Well, you have to start somewhere.
Right.
And our civic authority for policing is on guard the Shekinah. And here we are talking about who's not going or who's shunning going to a GRA conference at a time when law and order and our drugs culture has gone out of hand. You know,
that's a smokescreen to some extent.
It's not a smokescreen, but it's getting your priorities as ways. That's what I'm saying.
We've got bigger fish to fry. That is for sure.
Yeah. And this goes back to the point, and I hate to labour the point, it's back to priorities of government of the day and what we are at in terms of electing government.
Michael, just your take on that. I suppose as a member of a government party, and not you don't speak for them, of course. Well, maybe you do, I don't know. But what do you think of the commentary so far on Dublin and policing as a whole? Just in the last minute or two.
One of the points is, why did they bring in Drew Harris? And if you remember, you know, so bringing in somebody from outside, and I know Brendan's point about sometimes it's good to bring in external bodies, but I think the background to that, if you remember, is the Garda whistleblower scandals. There was a leading up to Francis Fitzgerald having to leave as justice minister. So it's a bit of a hot ministerial role, and that was a background to Drew Harris being brought in. But as we've all just said, there's a load of law and order issues to be dealt with, both in the capital and across the rest of the country. Things like, you know, the huge increase in traffic deaths are an example of where there's more resources required. Just driving from Greencastle to Letterkenny, you know, I can see that there's less Gardaí on the roads than there used to be, and you can see that behavior of people driving's got worse.
You know, what's also changed is the policing in Donegal used to be raised regularly in the Dáil in terms of numbers. In fairness, I'm going to say that now, I think Pat the Coat Gallagher often raised this issue. We don't see that as much, and it would be lovely to see that too, because I know the senior Gardaí in this county do need that backup publicly. Unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it. But I'm going to ask one question of you, because a few people have texted in. Letterkenny is the biggest population centre in Donegal, of course. People saying, I wouldn't walk around much of Letterkenny after 10 o'clock at night either. Would you, Michael?
I would, actually. I think it's perception, but I think Letterkenny's fine. I mean, I've collected my kids there at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and it's been fine. So my view is Letterkenny's pretty good.
Cathy, would you walk around Letterkenny after 10 o'clock at night?
Well, my own, I'm not sure. The town centre seems to be really, 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 really quiet. And I remember coming out of a show one night and feeling like, Yeah, there's, it just, you know, would it be nice to have a, maybe that's to do with the town planning or something, that everything just seems to have moved elsewhere. But yeah, it just felt, I'd be a wee bit uncomfortable, I think.
Yeah, Brendan? Well, I might be as well asking you about Sligo, really. You're probably more...
more closer to Sligo, or maybe Derry.
I'm going to the cottage bar at 2 in the morning.
I don't drink. First,
you don't have to drink to be in the bar, Brendan.
What do you call it? Look, I think Letterkenny, in fairness, even in the worst of times, had a good reputation. I think that hasn't changed. But we're speaking to a broader issue. You know, we focused on Letterkenny.
We don't have the time to dig in deeper.
We've focused on Letterkenny, but there's fears everywhere in every town and village.
Yeah, of course. I'm on and back. I just be guided by the listeners as well. So it was they that mentioned Letterkenny, not I. I find it, I'd be feel safe enough. Michael, thanks as always.
Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye. Kathy, lovely to have you on the show. Really appreciate it. Thanks very much indeed. And last, certainly not least, Brendan Byrne. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.